The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello and welcome into a special edition of At The Yard. It is a huge day. I'm Corey Seidman. I'm joined by Jim Salisbury, who's down in Clearwater. And the Phillies have agreed to a deal with Bryce Harper. 13 years, $330 million are the terms that Jim is reporting. So, Jim, you and I had been recording a podcast that we just finished earlier today on Thursday around 3:30 or 3 o'clock, and the minute that we stopped, the news broke. Can you kind of take us through some of the details that you were able to figure out and how this thing came together in the final days with the Phillies and Bryce Harper?
Wow. I wonder, do we have enough time? obviously, they went into the winter looking to make a big score, one of the superstar free agents. They pursued Machado, made an offer to Machado in December, or right before the new year. He ended up going to San Diego. That ramped up pressure on the Phillies to deliver, and they delivered Bryce Harper today. You know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at age 16. He was projected to be this historic type player, and you know, he's on a track to be a historic player. His first 7 years, he's been, you know, what they call a generational talent. Scott Boras's agent uses that term, and I don't think it's an exaggeration. You knew it was going to take a record type agreement, and it is. $330 million is the largest guaranteed contract in American sports history. 13 years ties the longest term in baseball, Major League Baseball history. John Middleton back in November said the Phillies were ready to spend some stupid money. I think he said that a little bit tongue in cheek, but it also indicated, you know, his desire to get in there and get a superstar, and he got one. And one thing that jumps out at me is, yes, they spent stupid money, $330 million. Wow. But I think they spent it smartly by stretching it out over 13 years. Mm-hmm. That keeps the AAV, the average annual value, to just over $25 million. To put that in perspective, they paid Jake Arrieta $30 million last year. They paid Cliff Lee $25 million per year in his time in Philadelphia, so it's not unheard of. And at that AAV, it allows them to do other things, like be active in future free agent markets, like try to negotiate an extension with JT Realmuto, who they gave up their top prospect for. So, like I said, I think they spent stupid money, and they spent it smartly. Scott Boras and Bryce Harper got their record-setting, iconic contract. I think both sides come out pretty happy today.
Jim, the thing that just stuck out to me right after, you know, settling into the news was, as you said, the way that they stretched out the contract, 13 years, $330 million. You know, there was a $330 million was a popular number in the weeks leading up to this deal, but I think many of us thought that it would be over, you know, 10 years, $33 million a year. The fact that it's 13 years, the AAV on this deal is just a bit above $25 million. It's $25.38 million. That's actually the 14th highest AAV in baseball history. So it's not as if Harper set a record in that regard. He did set a record in terms of total money. When this deal came down, the terms of it, were you surprised? Not just, I mean, the fact that it was 20, just a bit above 25, but also the fact that there were no opt-outs, given who Harper's agent is and given the way that the economy of baseball and the payment of superstars has gone in recent years.
I was not surprised at the length. I was not surprised at the guarantee. I mean, they had to go at least 326. I thought it was going to be between 325 and 340, 335 in that range. I was surprised there was no opt-out in it because they have become so in vogue these days in baseball. It's almost like players want to take the city for a test drive before deciding if they want to purchase the car. I detest them, opt-outs, because then all the risk falls on the team.
And totally.
If a guy's been good, now you're under pressure to give him a huge raise. Doesn't really, but whatever. It's just, I guess, you know, and then once the news broke and you got these figures, I was able to communicate with Scott Boras briefly. You know, according to Boras, Bryce did not want an opt-out clause. He wanted a long deal. He wanted a historic deal, but he wanted a deal that was going to take him up until he was 40 years old. He wanted to play that long. And I think this takes him to 39. Wanted to set records money-wise, wanted a ballpark that he could hit in and put up some numbers in. But the opt-out was not important to him and not something he sought because he wants to spend the rest of his career in this one city, doesn't want to move around, has a no-trade clause, full no-trade clause the Phillies gave him because he wants to stay here and, you know, play with one team. And that turned out to be the Phillies because they checked off a lot of boxes. They were willing to pay him historic money, at a historic length, and it's a good hitter's ballpark. It's a much better hitter's ballpark than San Francisco, which is another team that was in it.
So, you know, just to kind of remind people, Nolan Arenado, who signed the 8-year, $260 million extension earlier this week, he reportedly has an opt-out after 3 years. Manny Machado, who signed the 10-year, $300 million pact with the Padres, has an opt-out after 5 years. J.D. Martinez, who was the top position player free agent last year, has multiple opt-outs in his contract. So for Bryce Harper to forego the opportunity to opt out of his deal, do you think that speaks to confidence that he has in the future of the Phillies in terms of spending and building a perennial winner? I mean, how important do you think that aspect of it was in convincing Bryce Harper to be here long term? Because really, you know, the way I look at it is, and we see this in the NBA too, with guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant, when they go year to year with these teams, it almost holds the team hostage and it makes them have to worry about their future because they don't know if they're going to be able to retain their best player.
Right, and he wants to win a championship. To win a championship, in this game, you're gonna have good players around you, so he wants to see this organization be able to put together lineups that will win and pitching staffs that will win. I think it was a really smart move PR-wise not to demand an opt-out.
Absolutely,
it's a way to get a city to start embracing you even before you hit a home run. So, you know, I think in that stead, and you mentioned all those guys that have opt-outs. That is a rather remarkable part of this deal. But he was able to ascertain that this is a city that he's ready to come to and a team that he's ready to come to without an opt-out by looking John Middleton in the eye last weekend in Las Vegas. And it's very important for him to have a relationship with ownership. He had that in Washington. But it was very important for him to hear John Middleton's goals, John Middleton's vision for the franchise, the commitment to winning, that he's going to be surrounded by good players, have a chance to win a World Series. And he heard all that stuff from John. And then John went out and backed it up today by signing a really big paycheck. You know, John and the Buck family, the other primary ownership group, ownership has committed a lot of money. Matt Klentak has gone out and made a bunch of good investments with that money, and they're a much better team than they're the most improved team in baseball, wouldn't you say?
I mean, absolutely. This is a historic offseason. I who knows how everything's going to play out, but in terms of money spent and in terms of the talent that was brought in, Kevin Negandhi of ESPN, who's a Philly guy, he actually tweeted out earlier today that the Phillies are the first team in baseball history in one offseason to add three position players who were all-stars the previous year, which is incredible. And
two MVPs.
Yeah. And, you know, you add up all the money spent this offseason, it's over $500 million for the Phillies, because you also have to include the fact that, like, even though there was money offset in the Segura-Santana trade, Segura's under contract longer than Santana, so you have to add those future dollars as well, and I think it adds up to $513 million. And yet still, you know, I took a look at the Phillies' payroll just before we started doing the podcast, and they're at about $165 million right now, which is not the highest payroll they've ever had. They had a higher payroll in 2011, in 2012, in 2014. And even at 165, that's still about $40 million less than the luxury tax threshold. So the question everybody, you know, once they adjust to the Bryce Harper news, people are going to start saying, does this mean they could sign Mike Trout in 2 years? Well, you know, I would just say that they would still have enough financial wiggle room to do so, and that was one of the other really interesting byproducts of this Bryce Harper deal. I just wanted to ask you, so you, obviously, you're down in Clearwater today. There's a game going on when the Bryce Harper news breaks. What stuck out to you in terms of when you talk to Gabe Kapler, when you talk to some Phillies players in terms of their reaction to the news that they now have this superstar teammate?
Yeah, it was funny because it was, I think it was about the, right about the top of the fifth inning. And that's when the clubhouse opens to reporters because players can start filtering off the bench and get in the clubhouse. And, you know, if pitchers have gotten their work in, they can start getting ready to go home. Or if a guy wants to go into the clubhouse and go into the weight room, they're allowed to leave the dugout and the clubhouse opens to reporters. So I was almost, a few of us reporters were almost able to get like real-time reaction from Aaron Nola. And, you know, you almost could see guys' jaws dropping, or at least them picking up their jaws, because the story had become really cumbersome around here, almost annoying the last few days. Like, when's it going to happen? People were getting tired of it, and not just reporters, not just fans, players, you know, they were getting tired of it. Like, you know, come on, get it done or move on, you know, make a decision here. And, you know, speaking to McCutchen and Aaron Nola almost immediately, Aaron Nola is a really low-key guy. But, you know, he wasn't doing, you know, handstands because that's not his personality. But I'm going to tell you, he was oozing happiness. I mean, he was thrilled to hear this news. And then Gabe Kapler, who is much more prone to showing his emotions, he had a tough time reeling in his giddiness, but he had to be. As a club official, the deal is not official till there's a physical passed, till there's ink on the paper and a handshake. So there's still some things that have to be, you know, tied up here. So he couldn't comment as if it was definitive. So he had to couch things with, you know, if this news is true. But we all knew what he was saying. But he was thrilled. He was getting the news from fans behind the dugout as they were reading social media reports.
That's great.
And yeah, it's amazing how much the world has changed.
Sure has.
From you know, from the way we news used to be disseminated, and now it's out there, literally seconds after the two parties say we got a deal.
So Jim, a question on a lot of people's minds now is the construction of the Phillies lineup. Gabe Kapler last season tended to bat the Phillies' best hitters 2 and 4, the guys he valued as their best hitters 2 and 4. And you look across baseball, Mike Trout bats second, Chris Bryant bats second. That's kind of like the in vogue place for the superstar to hit. Where do you think Bryce Harper's going to be? Do you think he's going to be 2, or is he going to be closer to the middle of the lineup, 3 or 4?
Yeah, I think Gabe will do some experimenting because Harper's going to be here in plenty of time to play in a whole bunch of games, which is important on a lot of levels. I think Gabe will maybe take a look at him 2, 3, or 4. He can bat anywhere in that area. I mean, the way he sees pitches and takes walks and grinds out at bats, you could bat him leadoff, but I think you want him in that 2, 3, 4 area. Any one of those spots would not surprise me. None of those spots would surprise me. I do think Gabe is kind of intrigued by the possibility of Cesar Hernandez leading off again this year. Because he likes the way Cesar works counts. And I think he's very intrigued about, you know, contact machine like Segura batting second. So you could see maybe Harper 3 or 4, but whatever. I mean, wherever he is, he's going to add thunder. And they've lengthened their lineup so much this winter with the addition of you know, McCutchen, Realmuto, now Harper. Boy, I mean, Segura. Well, they're much improved batting order.
It's funny. The first thing that jumps out to me when I think about Cesar and Segura possibly batting 1 and 2 is that is the way that lineups used to be constructed. You know, the speedy batting average guys batting first and second. Now it's more, you see more power guys batting in the two hole. But that's what, you know, again, one of the things that sticks out to me about the Phillies additions this offseason is that really between those top six hitters, the Phillies can figure out so many different formulas, and they would all make sense. You could have Andrew McCutchen batting third. You could have Andrew McCutchen leading off if Cesar Hernandez is struggling because of the high OBP. I wrote this earlier today once the news came down, and whenever I write stuff like this, a part of me is a little hesitant because I don't want to come across as someone who's a homer. But when I look at this lineup, 1 through 8, the batting order, I'm talking specifically offensively, I can't find a deeper lineup in the National League. And I say that because if you look at the projected 6, 7, 8, you're probably looking at something like McCutchen, Herrera, Franco. Other teams don't have that in the 7, 8 spots of their lineup. Where do you think this stacks up in terms of the National League contenders?
You're right about the lineup. It's almost like an American League lineup. The power they've added, the home run potential in that ballpark. But, you know, in terms of, you know, I think they're, as we talked about, the most improved team in baseball over the winter. They had 4 good months last year. You saw some bright spots. I mean, obviously there was a difficult finish. But I think, you know, 80 wins last year, I think they could be knocking on the door for 90 wins. You get have a couple career years in there. You get a couple guys hot, some pitching steps forward, you stay healthy. You know, you're talking maybe even a tick or two more than that, but they're in the hunt. They're you know, this morning when we woke up, they could have been a third-place team. With the thunder they have in their lineup, they can win this division. They're a firm contender in my mind. And, you know, they're not going to – I've always thought this because of the additions they've made and the investments they've made this winter, giving up prospects for Realmuto. They're not going to – they're going to be in contention. They're not going to let this season of contention slip through their hands, meaning if they have a hole in July, I think they're going to go out and get it. They have a hole in their rotation, they're going to try to fill it, even if it's a hired gun, because, you know, they've had – they haven't had a winning season since 2011, haven't been to the postseason since 2011. Big improvements in the team, big investments financially. They need to play in October. They need to play in October, and they're ready to. They have the personnel. That should get them there.
I'm glad you mentioned the trade deadline possibility, because people are really hung up on Dallas Keuchel. Are the Phillies going to add Dallas Keuchel, you know, even before the Bryce Harper news, because he is by far the best free agent pitcher left. I don't think he's a perfect fit, just because I kind of see some signs of decline with a guy like that. I don't think he misses enough bats. But that's the key point you just made, is that this is not the only time you can improve your roster. You can
right. You
can improve your roster in early July if you're really in it and you're competing the way that you think you're going to be competing. And, you know, there's some guys out there. There's some intriguing guys out there. Like you mentioned Madison Bumgarner a few weeks ago on the podcast as a potential midseason acquisition for a contending team because he's entering the last year of his contract.
Why not? If you think you can win the World Series this year, and you know by the trade deadline, you're going to have a good idea how your team is. And you know, I think you have to think about something like that. I think there is a desire currently, as we sit here, on the last day of February, I think there's a desire to see what they have, how this thing plays a little bit. There's a desire to see that rotation of Nola, Arrieta, Eflin, Pivetta, and Velasquez, you know, go out there, take their turns, see how it all fits together, see if those back three are ready to take a step forward now that they have, I would say, pretty significant experience. They all have talent in their own way. They just need consistency. But, you know, if Dallas Keuchel were to call Matt Klentak tomorrow morning, March 1st, and say, boy, I really love the moves you've made. I'd like to be part of it. I'd take a 1-year deal. I think you have to consider it. But unless it's super, super short term like that, I think they're probably content to take a look at what they have.
Jim, you want to run through some listener questions here?
Yep.
This is a question we've gotten many different variations of. I don't have the answer. I don't know if you do. Everybody wants to know what number Harper's going to wear. He wore 34 in Washington. You know, that's obviously a number that has significance here. Any inclination as so far on what number he might wear with the Phillies?
Yeah, I don't know what number he is going to wear. 34 is available, but it's also not available. Roy Halladay wore that number. He's, you know, going in the Hall of Fame in July. There might be an organizational desire to retire that number. We'll see. So I do not know what number he's going to wear. I think there's a number of possibilities.
Okay, this one comes from Swaggy Ducats on Twitter. He wants to know how much money he should throw on the Bryce Harper home run over-under. The over-under is 32.5 for Bryce Harper, and that was set before he signed with the Phillies today. Quite frankly, for me, that's an easy over. He's averaged 32 homers the last 4 seasons. His career high is 42, but he has never played his home games at CBP, What do you think about that? Over under 32.5.
I think, can I get in on that action?
I think you can, Jim.
How do I do that? I'm not an experienced gambler.
After the show, I'll run you through it, okay?
All right,
Steve, our podcast engineer, will help you out there.
Just for entertainment purposes.
Just for entertainment purposes, of course. Gentleman's bet. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a pretty, in my opinion, that's a safe over. If Bryce Harper's able to stay healthy, CVP, he has more homers here than any other road stadium. Obviously, he's played more road games here than in many other NL parks, but, you know, he does have more homers here than he's hit in Atlanta, New York, and Miami. So he really could do some damage here. I mean, the thing that's always stuck out to me with Harper is how many home runs he hits to dead center, how many home runs he crushes, like 420 feet to dead center. I think he's really going to wear out that brick wall over these next 13 years.
Oof, I mean, another dynamic, not to get away from the question, he's got to go into Washington 9 games a year. That's
yeah. Do you think he's going to get booed?
I don't know. I mean, you know, people sometimes boo out of respect, too. They only boo the good players
right.
often, though. I'm sure he's going to hear some boos, but I'm sure he'll hear some appreciation as well. But give me the next question.
Okay, next one comes from Tyler Harper, who wants to know what this now means for Nick Williams. Is he the odd man out, and what should the Phillies seek in a Nick Williams trade if he is indeed the player that they're going to move to make room for Harper?
I think you seek the best possible young player you can get. But I don't know that he's definitely going to be traded or he's definitely the odd man out. He does have minor league options. He could be sent down. But maybe they, you know, decide to keep him as an extra outfielder and work him in. I don't know how that's going to shake out. You know, he could be safe and Altair could be safe for a while because, you know, two outfielders are currently hurt. Odubel's got a hamstring and Roman Quinn has an oblique. And with the oblique, you really want to, you know, rest a guy for a couple weeks so it doesn't recur and flare up again. And though, you know, he could be, you know, close to healthy by opening day, Quinn, I don't think he's going to have enough at-bats to be ready for opening day. So, you know, they might be safe with Altair and Williams on the opening day roster while some people get healthy.
Jim, this question comes from me. I'm kind of curious about this. So when Manny Machado signed with the Padres and he had that introductory press conference, he said something like, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, like, oh, San Diego, this is where I wanted to be all along. I'm glad they finally made it happen. And it struck me kind of as disingenuous because, you know, I don't – maybe he wanted to be in San Diego all along, but it sure seemed to me like he was just going to take the best offer. There had been rumblings, you know, in the weeks, the months leading up to Bryce Harper's signing that maybe he didn't want to play in Philadelphia. You heard something different than that, that he did not have an aversion to playing in Philadelphia. Do you think that that was all just like much ado about nothing?
I don't think it was much ado about nothing. And that's the key word to me, aversion. That means, you know, like – he absolutely didn't want to play in Philadelphia. I think this is a very nuanced topic. He is from Las Vegas. Look, he's kind of got that Hollywood WWE Worldwide Wrestling Federation personality. I'm not even sure if my lingo is right there, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Hollywood would have been a place that appeals to him. Dodger Stadium was a storybook destination for him, close to his home. It's Hollywood, all the post-career or even in-career marketing opportunities, the chance to rub elbows with Magic Johnson and be the Kobe Bryant of baseball. I think there was a real desire for him to maybe be that guy deep down inside, but especially because it was so close to home. But that did not supersede the desire to get record money and be paid like the player they think he is. And the timing wasn't right in Los Angeles. It wasn't right for him to go home. The timing was right for him to come to Philadelphia because the money was right. He wasn't going to say no to Philadelphia because it checked so many boxes. The only box it didn't check was it was close to home. But I think he's proven that this is a place he's going to embrace by just saying, yeah, I don't need an opt-out. So L.A. would have been the storybook place. This still has a chance to be a storybook place for him if he wins a couple home run crowns or goes to Cooperstown with a P on his hat and, most importantly, puts a couple World Series rings on his finger. One thing I like about Harper, and we've talked about this, I've always liked his competitive sneer. I think he's going to be ticked off if he doesn't win a couple World Series in his career. And you know what? That's a good intangible to have.
this town loves that fiery, competitive personality. Like, I think of Aaron Rowand as the poster boy for that, the way that this town embraced him. And Bryce Harper is that. He's just a superstar in addition to that. So, I mean, there's going to be a love affair here, if there isn't already. I mean, I'm expecting the Phillies to sell out many games this year, maybe even 81 at home. You talk about the buzz that there used to be in that park, you know, during that 07-11 era when every pitch felt like it had great importance. I got to imagine you're looking forward to that this summer, huh?
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. You know, the rebuild, watching the rebuild, and you know, watching a rebuild kind of evolve and then the team come to flower, it's like reading a great novel. I always said one of my favorite things about covering the Phillies was how down they were in those last years of the Vet. And watching it come together and grow and move into a new ballpark, and these kids, Rollins and Utley and Howard and Hamels, come up from the minors, and then adding Lidge and Worth and Victorino and all those guys, watching it all grow, come together, come and come to flower and make it and move into a championship team and become a championship team. That was fun to watch that in totality. And, you know, we've seen this rebuild now. We've seen a lot of empty blue seats, but it will be fun to see the people come back. And now it'll be fun to see if this is all this good talent can meld together into a championship team. So, yeah, it's been fun.
Amen to that. The lean years really help you appreciate the exciting ones all the more. And let's end here. This feels like a good question to end with. This comes from Brian on Twitter. With the length of Bryce Harper's contract, would it benefit the Phillies if the National League adopted the DH in the next five or so years? And do you think that that played into their thinking at all?
I think it would benefit them, yes, because as he gets older and his defense declines, he's got a landing spot where you can still profit from his bat, and it might help his bat because he's going to be off his feet a little bit more. So I think the possibility of the DH, which I think is probably even more than a possibility, I think it's probably going to happen. I think that benefits both Harper and the Phillies. And did the Phillies think about that? Absolutely. They think about everything. You know, they got smart people upstairs. They think of everything. The three reliever minimum would help them because you could stack a couple right-handers around them, and if somebody wants to bring in a lefty, now they got to face a couple of tough righties. So if the three batter minimum for a reliever comes in, that could help. If they ban or limit shifts, that could help. The changing landscape of baseball and some of the rule changes that could be on deck could all benefit the Phillies in a long-term deal with Harper, and benefit Harper as well.
And it would help Bryce really age gracefully as he's under contract for these 13 years. It's just so crazy to think about. But you know what? If there was ever a 13-year contract that made sense, it's one for a 26-year-old player because of how unique this opportunity was for the Phillies. All right, well, Jim, thanks as always, man. You really killed it this offseason. You got a lot of details and a lot of information that many others could not or did not. And you helped us kind of cipher out the BS from the truth. And now it all culminated on February 28th with Bryce Harper signing a historic deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. And pretty soon he will be introduced in Clearwater, and you'll be there for it. So, Jim, thanks as always. And thanks for all you out there listening to At the Yard.